thanks very much, Jacqueline. I don't know what that means. I've got a bit more time, but I'll try and stick to my allotted 20 minutes. And I'd also like to thank Sue Rickard and her colleagues at CEDA for inviting NAB Capital, for inviting me to speak on behalf of NAB Capital at today's CEDA function. It's the second time I've done this and the second time I've followed Malcolm Eady. And as Sue said at the beginning, I think the question she posed last year was, could Australia be immune from the downturn in the US? And I think what we've just seen from Malcolm is an excellent rendition of how the US recession has actually spilled out and has now become a global recession. And I guess my response to that is that whilst we may have been able to withstand a downturn in the US because of our strong trade links into Asia, at this point in time it seems that nowhere will be immune from the global slowdown, the global recession effectively that we have now. So I guess my job today, Malcolm's spoken a lot about the global economy. I wanted to talk more about how the global financial crisis has come back to Australia and what that means in terms of the near-term outlook, but also the medium-term outlook. And it's also interesting to speak after David Pearce, who quite a long time ago was a colleague of mine at the Industries Assistance Commission, where he worked on structural policy issues. And David's work on climate change with Warwick McGibbon has been first rate. And I actually believe that probably climate change is the most important policy issue of this age. But right now, of course, the most urgent policy issue is the global financial downturn and the impending downturn, the downturn we're seeing the beginnings of and which we feel is still a long way to run in Australia. And certainly the policy response from the Reserve Bank, in my view, has been fantastic. I think we are blessed in Australia with excellent policy makers, both at the Reserve Bank and also in the government, with Ken Henry and his colleagues at the Treasury giving excellent advice to Kevin Rudd. And certainly the Rudd government has been quick to try and implement those policies. And I'd add that to the list of things that Malcolm put up in terms of reasons to be positive about Australia. But having said all that, certainly there's a number of channels now through which we're seeing the global financial crisis come back into the Australian economy. And really, the first one of those that, and I guess as an economist working for a bank, it's one that we spend a lot of time on, is through the interest rate mechanism. Now, you'll all know, of course, and Malcolm kind of went over some of these issues in his presentation, that there's now a range of policies which have been adopted around the world to try and mitigate the effects of the global financial crisis. And this is our kind of brief summary of it. We call this the UK model, although certainly there are variants of it all around the world and they're not always the same, but most of these measures originally seem to come out of the UK. And effectively what's happened is that there's the deposit guarantees been introduced, and that's to stop a run on banks such as the Northern Rock run in the UK, which eventually saw that bank being nationalised. Then there's the guaranteeing of securities issued by the banks, and those securities are used by the banks to fund themselves. In other words, they obtain money from the wholesale markets by issuing securities. That's lent on to customers. And when confidence in the banking sector underwent that massive downturn that Malcolm so eloquently talked to you about, then one of the corollary issues was that it meant that people wouldn't lend money to banks. And that meant that they couldn't get funding at any reasonable price. So guaranteeing the bonds that the banks issue makes investors more likely to buy those bonds and therefore helps them to want to lend to their customers. Around the world we've seen equity injections in banks. There's often talk now of banks being nationalised. And you can see there that's the first departure from this list for Australia. Australia's banking sector is very strong. Its capital base is excellent and the profitability of the banks remain good. So there's been not even any talk here of equity injections into our banks. And as Malcolm said, that's paid off in terms of the banks being able to pass on the policy-induced cuts in interest rates to their customers in large part. You will, of course, heard the talk in America about establishing a good bank, bad bank sort of approach to the bank's balance sheets. Effectively, what that means is that bad assets on banks' balance sheets will be effectively sold into a bad bank, which will collect those bad assets. That'll free up capital for the banks so that they can lend more to consumers and businesses. Now, again, there's no question of that being necessary in Australia because the Australian banks hold very little of these toxic assets. But having said all that, I guess that doesn't mean that the banking system in Australia has been immune. And as I said a moment ago, about the first way in which this came through, the global financial crisis came through to the Australian economy, was through the interest rate route. And this is a chart that shows you the cost of funds for banks. So the blue line on the chart here, blue line here, is the cost of five-year money for banks. In other words, the banks issue a bond to an investor for 5 years. And look back there in the 2005-2006 period, earlier than that, normally the banks would pay a spread to the swap rate of around about 15 basis points for that money. Now, if you think about the bank's funding costs, about 60% at the moment of their funding comes from deposits. About 20% of it comes from this source. So that big increase in the cost of funds has been a major cost impost for the banks. That's part of the reason why the banks have not been able to fully pass on the entire interest rate cuts to their customers. And Malcolm, of course, talked about how well that has been passed on, and I think on the Reserve Bank's own calculations of the 300 basis points in cuts in the cash rate between September and December, 275 were passed on. There's now been 400 basis points. 375 has been passed on, much, much better than other economies, but not the whole lot. And so that's the difference, is this increase in funding costs. Now, you'll see there that the government guarantee is actually helping things. And it's interesting, I've just spent about 2 weeks up in Asia going around and talking to NAB Capital clients. A lot of them actually central banks in the Asian economies. And a lot of them are very willing and enthusiastic to deal with Australian banks now because they understand that Australia's banks are in a much better position than many others around the world and have higher credit ratings, so therefore they're better counterparties to deal with. But when I went up to Asia, the guarantee had just come into operation. And at that point, as you can see, this dot up the top here was what the cost of guaranteed funds was for the banks. So effectively, the banks were issuing that money at a cost of around about 120 basis points, but then you've got to add on the 70 basis points for the bank guarantee. So the bank effectively absorbs that guarantee. That's the cost, if you like, of the insurance. So the cost of funds for banks was around 190 basis points. The investor saw a lower outcome, of course, but for the banks, that's what they saw. Now, in that time I've been away, the cost of funds, as you can see, there's dropped to about 140 basis points. 70 for the guarantee, around 70 for the issues. And you can see a couple of issues there. NAB's done $500 million on the 6th of February at around about that 70 basis points rate. ANZ has done $850 million on the 29th of January, same rate. And you can see there that the guaranteed rates are well below that blue line. The blue line is trade in the secondary market, trade in the secondary market for these bank bonds. So the bank guarantee is working. It's reducing the cost of funds. That's one of the reasons why when the Reserve Bank cut by 100 basis points in early February, that was almost immediately passed on to customers because the cost of funds for banks is coming down. So we can thank the government for that sort of action. The other 20% of the funding comes from the short-term money market. That's funds basically of the duration of 0 to 1 year. So that's funded by generally issuing bank bills. Again, you can see there at the beginning of this chart, that used to be 10 to 15 basis points over the Reserve Bank cash rate. It jumped up to almost 140 basis points over the cash rate. Currently, it's sitting around about 50 basis points over the cash rate. A lot higher than it was, but we've seen some stability around that period, or around that rate of 50 basis points over the cash rate now. So again, that allowed the banks to pass on the whole 100 basis points of the Reserve Bank's cash rate cut in February. But that mechanism still means that the cost of funds in Australia is higher than it otherwise would be. Therefore, interest rates in Australia are higher than they otherwise would be. So that's still, if you like, having a relative braking effect on the economy. Now, in terms of the US, and Malcolm's talked about this, so I'm not going to spend much time on it, but we all know the story about the global transmission of the recession from the US and then into Europe and the UK and then into Asia. And I guess it's Asia that I think is most interesting. If I think of the one thing that we got most wrong last year in our forecast, it was that we thought that China was going to be able to withstand the downturn. Now, part of that was because we underestimated the impact that the financial crisis would have in Europe. In other words, we underestimated the impact that the banks in Europe would suffer and the downturn in European economies. But we also took the view that because China had such a great fiscal position, that they'd be able to underpin their economy by fiscal policy. What's actually happened is that they have introduced very, I guess, stimulatory fiscal policies, but at the same time, they've suffered a massive reduction in their trade. In particular, they've seen now for 3 months in a row falls in exports. Now, I certainly thought that exports would pull back and probably be flat for a while as demand in the Western economy slowed down for their consumer good exports out of China, but we didn't expect they'd go backwards. They've gone backwards now for 3 months in a row, and you can see on the red line on that chart that imports have actually fallen by over 20%. Up until recently it was by 20%, it's now sort of in the vicinity of approaching 50%. Those imports, a lot of them come from Australia, so this is a more traditional transmission mechanism that's affecting Australia, is that demand for our exports is falling because one of our key trading partners, China, which is our largest trading partner, but not our largest export destination, but certainly one of the most important growth markets for Australia, suddenly going backwards. Their demand for Australian products is falling. That's really hurt the mining sector in Australia and the states reliant on mining. That downturn in exports from China, exports is the red line, has shown up in a reduction in industrial production in China. Again, industrial production is what uses, of course, the imports of raw materials from Australia. So this is, I guess, the transmission mechanism that's taken us by surprise. And when we saw this happening, we cut our own GDP forecast for Australia. We're now, I guess, below consensus. The consensus forecast just released for February for Australia is 0.3% positive. That's a little weaker than the Reserve Bank's forecast, which I think are a bit over 0.5%, Malcolm, for 2009. Our forecast is for a fall of around 0.25% in GDP. Under any definition, that represents a recession, by the way. Certainly not a severe recession, but nevertheless a recession. And you can see there that we've got very weak growth for the major economies in the developed world, but I guess I'd point out again, China here, 6.2%. I guess last time I was here and I didn't have time to check, a year ago we would have had a number more like 8% for China's growth, underpinned again by that fiscal policy response we expected, but the fiscal policy hasn't been enough to offset the downturn in industrial production in China. Now, part of this trade mechanism also works through commodity prices, and Malcolm touched on this also, but just wanted to stress that we've had one of the most massive terms of trade, commodity price booms, that we'll see, you know, in lifetimes in Australia. And now actually that's now turned right around. We're not expecting a complete reversal, but we're expecting a 25% drop in commodity prices. So that also is a weight on our economy. Now I just want to, that's a mechanism I've talked about, but I just want to talk about current conditions in the economy. Some of this is a bit gloomy, but there is a very important grain of positiveness about this. And I wanted to start with the housing market because I've already had an implicit question about the housing market, and I'm sure I'll have more later on. But the housing market in Australia has now been going backwards for three quarters. And we've got the last two quarters up there over the last 12 months on average. House prices, I'm sorry for those people down the back, this might be a little hard to see, but in this table here, house prices on average down by 3.3%. And you can see that basically for most capital cities there, we've got falling house prices in Australia. That's been in operation for three quarters in a row. I guess the point about this I'd make is that this is actually by design. When the Reserve Bank increased interest rates to 7.25%, the clear and explicit desire was to slow the economy down. And, you know, the Reserve Bank statement just released a week or so ago makes the point that the key transmission mechanism for monetary policy, or one of the key transmission mechanisms, is through interest rates and hence the housing market. So I guess the silver lining on this cloud is that it shows you that monetary policy was operating as recently as December of last year. In other words, the tightening in policy that we saw earlier is still working to slow the economy down. That makes me very confident the dramatic easing that we've seen in policy since September of last year will actually have a very positive effect on demand coming through, but not for a while. As you can see, there are lags here. Again, this demonstrates the lags. So it won't be until 2010, in our view, that we'll start to see the accelerating effect of the easing in monetary policy, the fiscal easing, the depreciation of the dollar coming through. So I guess there's some positive stuff there, but in the meantime, things look pretty bleak. Just on the housing market, a question I get asked a lot is whether Australia's likely to suffer the same sort of housing market downturn as in the US. And the answer is categorically no. As you can see there, we didn't have a house price bubble in Australia. In fact, we've had in Sydney, for example, house prices going sideways now since around 2003. That's because the Reserve Bank actually raised interest rates quite early in this upturn phase of our economy that we were having in the mid-2000s, and were able to effectively snuff out the housing boom so that we didn't have those excesses they had in the US. Now what we find is that delinquency rates in Australia are running at about 0.4% for the bank's mortgage books, way, way, way below those in the US. That's a very positive thing for Australia as well. So whilst I've got quite a gloomy outlook for housing in the next 12 months, down around 5% nationally, nevertheless, I think our housing market is in much better shape than housing markets elsewhere in the world, notably in the US. The third transmission mechanism, confidence. Malcolm's already mentioned this. The red line on this chart is the Westpac Melbourne Institute Consumer Confidence Survey. Confidence has just been released recently again for February, still weak. The red line in this chart is business confidence from our own NAB business survey. It's at the moment at a record low. The implication of that is that businesses will reduce investment. So in our forecast for Australia, as you can see from here, we have quite a weak outlook. As I said, a fall in GDP this year of around about 0.25%. We do have a pickup next year, but I'd call that a very U-shaped recovery, a mild recovery. And here's some of the components. And you'll see there in particular quite a sharp pullback in household consumption, which is very important, a negative for business investment. When business confidence is weak, business investment is weak. So that's where the components come from. And if you want kind of an overall picture of the outlook for Australia, I guess this is our best summary. So a weak economy ahead, the first 6 months are going to be very rough, recovery coming through very late this year, unemployment rising throughout this year and into next year. We've got a peak of around 7%, could be a little upside risk on that. Inflation coming back into the Reserve Bank's target band more rapidly than earlier thought, and that's part of the reason for that is because the downturn is more severe. Last, on the local economy, just a quick thing on fiscal policy. This is a chart, again, I've been using in Asia. And I have to say that I think the government is actually doing the right thing in quickly trying to use fiscal policy to reduce the downside risk on our economy, because if you look at this chart here, you can see that under the government's current scenario, which is the dark blue line here, Australia still will be in a position where the government's net financial liabilities, are roughly zero. Far, far better than will be the case for the UK, Germany, or the United States. And that, again, puts Australia in good stead and makes us seen in a very good light by international investors. I won't go through this particular slide here because it's about the exceptional things about Australia, so I can come back to, but Malcolm's mentioned many of these, so I'll pass on to that. And I just lastly wanted to talk about our outlook for the Reserve Bank and the currency. Look, basically, I think the Reserve Bank is signalling, and I don't think we'll get much signalling from Malcolm today, but nevertheless, I think they're signalling that they're coming towards the end of their easing phase for now, and I guess our view is though that they'll still do some more. It's hard to believe that having cut rates by an outsized 100 basis points in February, that's it. I guess our view is that there's certainly with a cash rate of 3.25%, there's plenty of room to move down. So we're still expecting a cut of around 50 to 75 basis points at the March board meeting from the Reserve Bank. Certainly that's what the market's pricing, around 50 basis points. Then we think there will be a pause because a lot of stimulus has been applied to our economy, but as we see an increase in unemployment ahead. The data turns out bad for the first half of the year. Our view is that the Reserve Bank probably comes back later in the year and cuts again down to a cash rate trough, which will eventually be around 2% during the course of this year from its current 3.25%. On the Australian dollar, it's been a very, very difficult currency to forecast, but basically we think from here on the currency will go higher. Even at a trough of 2%, the Reserve Bank's cash rate will be 200 basis points above the Fed funds rate, about 100 basis points above the UK rate, 50 basis points above those in the Eurozone, in Europe. So that means interest rate relativities will be positive for Australia, and we also expect commodity prices will bottom out and start to look better by the end of the year. Those things support, we believe, a mild upturn in the Australian dollar, so we have a forecast of around 75 cents by mid-year and around 78 or 79 cents by the end of the year. And I'll just show you a couple of slides here which actually has forecasts in them, but I won't dwell on those forecasts, and I should also show you this, which basically says, look, I've tried really hard here today, but if some of this is wrong, you know, please don't blame me as an individual. I'll leave it at that.